It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Kate Archer-Kent.
And I'm Rob Ferret. New work requirements will kick in for people enrolled in Medicaid starting in 2027, and Wisconsin is among the states scrambling to implement that change by the end of this year.
The federal budget reconciliation bill passed in July requires that Medicaid recipients spend 80 hours per month at work or in job training in order to receive benefits. Congressional Republicans have celebrated the new requirements, and Senate Majority Leader John Thune says it's a common sense reform.
Advocates have expressed some concern about the change. The Congressional Budget Office estimates that nearly 5 million people would lose Medicaid coverage nationwide because of the new requirements, including people who might be eligible but who lose coverage because of administrative obstacles.
And polling from the health policy research firm KFF finds states will face challenges in preparing to administer the requirements by this time next year.
Jennifer Tolbert is Deputy Director of KFF's Program on Medicaid and the Uninsured. Jennifer, welcome to Wisconsin Today.
Thank you.
We are on the clock in Wisconsin. The state is to come up with our plan for how these Medicaid work requirements are going to go into action. Can you give us the basics, though? Based on that law passed in mid-2025, what are states like Wisconsin going to have to put into practice come 2027?
Right. So starting in January of 2027, so less than a year from now, states will need to verify that individuals applying for coverage or enrolled in coverage in Medicaid, and in Wisconsin, this means the individuals who are enrolled in the Badger Care Waiver, so adults without dependent children in that program, will now need to meet new work requirements. So they will be required to engage in work or qualifying activities such as community service for at least 80 hours per month or be in school full time. Now, there are some exemptions to these work requirements, including parents, adults who are pregnant, those who are medically frail, or who are participating in a substance use disorder program, among others.
Basically a year for states to get this into action, which might feel like a long time. You surveyed a bunch of states. Wisconsin was not among the respondents, I understand. But what kind of challenges are states looking at as they figure out, okay, how are we actually going to put this into practice?
Right. The biggest challenge here, I think, is the timing, as you note. So in order to implement these work requirements, most states, in fact, all states, will have to make changes to their Medicaid eligibility systems. And these kinds of complex changes require both time and money, which will be in short supply for states. Another issue is that states are going to have to make some key implementation decisions prior to having full guidance from the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, which is the agency that oversees the Medicaid program. Things like who will qualify for exemptions, what kinds of documentation will be required, what data sources will states access to verify whether individuals are complying. Those kinds of decisions states are going to need to make before CMS likely issues guidance, which is expected by June of this year. And then I'll just note another challenge that states are going to face has to do with outreach to inform individuals about these new requirements. So the problem here is that not everyone is going to be subject to these new work requirements. So states are going to have to figure out how to get the word out to the people who need to comply with these new requirements without confusing other people on the Medicaid program who will not be subject to these requirements.
And then the bureaucracy involved in establishing that, you know, you worked X amount of hours or you volunteered X amount. You know, some people, it might be really easy. I have a pay stub from the restaurant I work with. Look, 20 hours. Boom. Other people might be, I drove for Uber 30 hours that week, none the next week, and I volunteered at the food. Like, this could get really complicated, right?
Yes, very complicated. The law specifies that states are required to use available data sources where possible to verify whether people are meeting the requirements or whether they qualify for an exemption. But there are lots of people for whom they may not have information in traditional data sources like state wage databases or other sources that states regularly turn to. So I'm thinking particularly gig workers and those who may be self-employed who don't get that paycheck from an employer. And so there's not an employer to connect with. States are going to have to get creative and find and identify other sources that they will be able to access to gather this information. And then in the situation where a state cannot verify that someone is meeting the requirements or is exempt from the requirements, a key issue is going to be what kinds of documentation will be required to confirm that that person either is meeting the requirements or does in fact qualify for an exemption. And so these are really complex decisions that will impact how the eligibility systems need to be upgraded and changed. And so it's a lot of moving parts, again, that states are going to have to pull together in a very short time frame.
We've got a couple states that have tried this. Arkansas and Georgia got exemptions, waivers, I believe, under the first Trump administration. The Biden administration pushed back on them. Arkansas briefly did this. Georgia won a court case, so they had a longer track record. Has there been enough of that, though, to where states can look at those two states and learn anything?
Yes and no. I think experiences in both Georgia and Arkansas do highlight the challenges that all states are going to face as they implement these work requirements. I think particularly in Arkansas, the state engaged in an extensive outreach program and was able to actually use available data sources to match about two-thirds of enrollees subject to the requirements. So to identify that though two-thirds of the individuals either already complied with the work requirements or qualified for an exemption. But nevertheless, 18,000 people still lost coverage, many of whom were working or would have qualified for an exemption, but simply never reported to the state any information that would have allowed the state to confirm compliance. So I think making sure people understand what information they need to provide and within which what timeframes is going to be a significant challenge. And I think the experience in Georgia also highlights the sort of unique challenge of requiring verification at application. These are individuals who may be newly applying for Medicaid and for whom the Medicaid agency really does not have any information available. And so it's going to be particularly tricky, especially for people who may qualify for an exemption, trying to gather the right information to ensure that people who are medically frail, who do have serious complex either physical or mental health conditions, are not denied coverage because simply because the state has no way of knowing that they in fact have these conditions.
Now, between these work requirements and some other changes, probably according to the Congressional Budget Office anyway, some millions of Americans would lose Medicaid coverage because of these changes with the work requirements. Some of them could be, well, they're not working or volunteering enough. Some of them could be they're not, they are working, but they're not jumping through the hoops. They're not providing the right documentation. The general sense is, though, this is going to lead to fewer people getting health care coverage. Do I have that about right?
You do. In fact, the Congressional Budget Office has estimated that there will be 5.3 million more people uninsured in 2034 because of these new Medicaid work requirements. And again, as you note, this may be because some people simply don't meet the requirements. But in many cases, people are meeting the requirements or qualify for an exemption, but simply cannot meet the documentation requirements to prove that. So this is the, and in fact, the work requirements in Medicaid are the largest source of coverage loss estimated by the Congressional Budget Office.
Jennifer, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Thank you very much. It was a pleasure.
Jennifer Tolbert is Deputy Director of KFF's program on Medicaid and the uninsured. To learn more about how this could impact some providers that care for Medicaid patients in Wisconsin, Scott Stewart joins us, CEO of the Wisconsin Primary Healthcare Association. They represent the state's 19 community health centers. Scott, thanks for joining us.
Absolutely. Happy to be here.
Now, before we get into the possible impact of work requirements for Medicaid recipients, one thing I want to hammer home really clear, if we haven't done it enough already, this is not going to kick into effect in 2025. 2026. People shouldn't be worried about the work requirement and satisfying it in this calendar year. Do I have that right?
That is correct. And we are pretty clear on that usually. It's like, hey, like we do have a year to figure this out. And so, yes, luckily we still have some time.
Okay, so we're in that process now. The state will be figuring out how to administer this. Your association, now you work with health centers where there are a lot of Medicaid patients, up to 70% in some cases Medicaid funded. What do you see the potential when they do come into effect as scheduled in 2027, the potential impact on the centers you work with?
Yeah, and so, you know, I think I'm going to speak maybe quickly to just all of the things that are kind of happening in this healthcare space right now, right, is if it was just Medicaid work requirements that we were trying to figure out, that'd be one thing, right? It'd be, okay, great. We have a plan in place. We can figure out how we balance the money that's coming in and make sure that we have sustainability. But I think for me, it's the fact that we're facing just kind of death by a thousand cuts, I'll call it, right? It's, you know, the ACA subsidies are going into effect this year, where those are going away. And so that will have an impact in some way, shape, or form on our health center's revenue. We then have a whole bunch of miscellaneous things like 340B being impacted. And so that's having an impact this year on our health center revenue. And then when you look at the Medicaid cuts coming up, that's going to be the real big piece, right, that will impact us the most. When you look at it across the state, just in 2024, about 55% of our patients were on Medicaid and 20% were uninsured. And when you look at that, I think in 2025, we're going to see a pretty dramatic increase in that already, just because a lot of the administrative changes that have happened over the last year. And then I think from there, I think you're going to see a really pretty significant impact starting in 2027 to really, I think, hit the home for our health centers to have a really big, significant revenue impact. You know, we were started as health centers to really help support not only the uninsured, but also the Medicaid and other kind of underserved and patients that are out in the communities that we serve. And that, I think, for us, you know, our sustainability really comes with making sure that we have a good payer mix that involves Medicaid. And when that goes away, that's a huge revenue hit for us. And so I worry about sustainability for our health centers long term to really make sure that they can continue providing the high level of services that they're providing to fill the gaps in the communities and as a key safety net provider that really is you know, we don't think around it until they're gone, right? But those safety net providers are there all the time. And then when you start to impact our safety net, then we worry around where do patients actually get care? Where do patients go when they need services? And that's what I worry about, I think, broader for not only our health centers, but our communities.
And then zooming in on the work requirements themselves, you've said elsewhere, including, I think, talking to one of our reporters earlier this year, you don't necessarily see a lot of benefit. What kind of concerns do you have about who would be impacted by that work requirement?
Yeah, I think it's multifaceted, I think, on that one. One is, you know, we know that a lot of people who are on Medicaid already are usually working. I think the last statistic I saw was something like 90% or something like that, right? So it's a pretty significant amount that are already working. The problem with this is that it's administrative burden, right? And so you think around, you know, I have friends and family who are on Medicaid. And so you think around, hey, you know, if it's going to be every single week, I have to go in and check in with Medicaid and tell you that I'm working the required number of hours. That's just an administrative burden that we're adding onto the system that will automatically kick people out in some way, shape, or form. And we saw that in the public health emergency in many ways, right? We had to really extend a lot of resources to make sure that people knew what they needed to do to submit those requirements. Separately, right, it's what I worry around is the populations who really should be on Medicaid. So, you know, the folks who would qualify for exemptions, who would have the ability to be on but may need additional assistance, or now we have to involve our providers, right? Our clinicians have to get involved and make those decisions to say, hey, you are actually considered someone who could be medically frail, or all those different pieces that come into play around how do we make sure that the people who are required, who should be on Medicaid, actually stay on? And now it's just adding that additional step, right, on how do we make sure that to actually qualify that person, to make sure that they have the paperwork and the documentation on it. And so that's really, it's like, again, it's really a small population that you're saying are actually going to be impacted on it, right? But that still equals about 270,000 people that will likely in Wisconsin lose Medicaid in some way, shape, or form. And so that's to me, I think the biggest concern is that the people who really should be on it will likely be kicked off anyway because they won't be able to meet the administrative burdens that are now placed on the program.
Right. So KFF estimates that nationwide, nearly 5 million Medicaid recipients would lose coverage because of work requirements. Your concern, it sounds like, is that's not the person who could be working but isn't. Your concern is that, hey, the person is working or volunteering enough to meet the requirements, but they didn't get the paperwork right, or they have medical reasons where they can't work and they didn't get the paperwork right. Am I hearing you right?
I think that's exactly right, yes.
If the state came to you as they're trying to implement this, because this is federal law now, they're going to have to do it unless that changes over the course of 2026, and said, hey, we got to put this thing in place. What would you want to see for guidelines to expedite this, to make sure that as little of that kind of bureaucratic loss of Medicaid happens? What would you tell them?
Yeah, I do think the nice thing is there are a lot of opportunities, I think, for the state to play a really significant role in helping to kind of bridge those gaps. You know, one thing being, right, that SNAP already requires work requirements. And so the state has been assessing how do we actually work with the SNAP program and combine these two to kind of help with bridging the gap on those work requirements so there's less submission, right? Usually people who are on Medicaid are going to be on SNAP in some way, shape, or form. So I think there's a lot of connection there that I think is helpful. I'd also say is how do we just make it, you know, there's a lot of background information that the state already gets. And so, how do we just continue to combine and utilize the data that we're already receiving to make the biggest impact, to minimize the burden on the provider, to minimize the burden on the patients that are going to be on that? And so, I think that's really, I think, where we can play a really significant role. The challenge being that, you know, when even on the SNAP requirements, they are different than the work requirement, the varying different levels and work requirements for that will be for Medicaid. And so you start to have some separation on like, how do you actually combine these systems when they're actually looking at separate things, right? Or they have different requirements that they have to meet. So there's like things like that that really come into play that make it challenging and concerning. And there's just a lot of differences with how this will all operate. The nice thing being, I will say that I'm grateful to have a state administrative office and an executive office that actually really is looking to make sure that they can do that as easy as possible for all of the patients who are on Medicaid right now. And so we have already been in conversations with the state, luckily, especially, you know, the Medicaid office, to talk through, hey, how can we minimize this? How can we work with you? And they are very receptive of that. And so I'm grateful that we have that. My worry, though, right, is that the minute that these get implemented, we're going to be having a potentially new governor, right? And so that administrative side may change drastically, right? And just because of our state elections. And so that philosophy at the office may change a little bit, depending on who comes in. And so there's a lot of, I think, concerns in the on the state level on what does that end up looking like long term.
Scott, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for reaching out.
That was Scott Stewart, CEO of the Wisconsin Primary Healthcare Association. Earlier, we heard from Jennifer Tolbert, Deputy Director of KFF's program on Medicaid and the uninsured. Been talking about changes to Medicaid, which will require proof of employment or job training starting in 2027.